Hello once again, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of the Film Stage Show. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me, as always, are my two nemeses? Anyway, Nick Newman, associate editor for the Film Stage.
Good afternoon.
And Danny King, and writer for the Film Stage.
Good afternoon, and welcome to the Film Stage Show.
All right, now we're going to have a series of one-upsmanships rather than blind copying. I'm okay with that. I'm good with that. Anyone joining us for the first time, the Film Stage Show is a movie review podcast. We're the official podcast of thefilmstage.com, and this is how we work. First, we'll start off with a brief discussion topic. We'll move into a feature review, which this week will be Argo, which is directed by and starring Ben Affleck. Then we'll move into our view of the week ahead, letting you know what we think are the best bets in DVD and theaters. And then we'll give you a random review of something that we watched in our own personal time this week. Before we get into that, though, I'd like to say that you should check us out on iTunes, subscribe, rate us, leave a comment, and if you ever have anything you'd like to say to us directly, you can always email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. So, moving on, our discussion topic for this week will be about a series of articles that have been written lately that have been talking about the death of movie culture. Particularly, I'm looking at a refutation that was written by Richard Brody over at The New Yorker, because yes, I do read The New Yorker, and I'm not ashamed. In this article, he refutes two other pieces, Andrew O'Hare's at Salon and Jason Bailey's at The Atlantic, that's saying that movie culture is changing and or dying because of the lack of impact that foreign and limited release films that are put into art house theaters have on American movie culture. So we wanted to discuss this, see if we have any anecdotal evidence to support or deny either of these claims, and just to kind of see why this might be if we do find that it is the case. So, Nick Newman, why don't you start us off? What are your thoughts on the possible death of film culture?
I don't think there is a death of film culture, Brian. It's kind of a dicey subject because I think there are so many facets to it and there's so many cultural boundaries to consider. I hate using terms like cultural boundaries, but here we are. It's a Sunday and I'm using that term. There is no death of film culture. I would like to quote a tweet from film critic Bilge Abiri, who said, "Film culture isn't dead. It's just tired of dealing with you fucking people."
I like it.
I think pretty much sums it up. There's still a passionate group discussing important films, serious films, the arts, if you will. Go to Mubi.com. Read the notebook section. Go to Barnes & Noble and pick up a copy of Film Comment. In my hands right now, you can even hear it. I am holding the most recent issue of Film Comment, which dedicates something like 50 pages to the New York Film Festival, discussing every movie that is, well, at least listing every movie that is played there, discussing the different years and the different movements. And you see that, no, people are still discussing important films, and they're still giving them serious thought. Maybe they're not talking about them in bars or around the dinner table, or at least not around most dinner tables, but it's still there. It's just moved. And I think that the thought that film culture has died is really more an indication of the person saying it than the actual film culture itself. I think that if you say it's dead, you're just not looking in the right place. You're sticking around to modes that have become archaic, really.
Yeah, I definitely agree, especially about the archaic modes. I mean, I'm no longer in college. When I was in college, I had a firm group of friends who were all art house aficionados. Now that I'm older and entered into the workforce, I'm usually around people who are discussing YouTube clips. However, I still know that film culture is alive because of the internet. I mean, you go online, you go to a specific website that has to do with film, and almost every new outcoming film has a massive amount of discussion surrounding it. And, you know, I despaired for a while that I had lost whatever small group of cinephiles that I had to the sands of time. But really, if you know where to look for it, like, you're not going to find it in a salon somewhere, you know, being discussed over martinis. But, I mean, the discussion is still out there. And so I definitely agree that these people who seem to think that it's gone forever and that it has died and that there's no domestic impact of foreign films like this anymore are kind of off their rocker. But Danny, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I would agree that it isn't dead so much as it's just changed naturally with technology. You know, like you said, we don't talk about these things over martinis anymore so much as we talk about them over podcasts like these or internet threads or things like Nick mentioned, like Movie, which is a really great resource. I think one of the problems is that people that have written these articles like to dwell on negative things. I know that David Denby recently wrote this kind of massive article that was kind of a critique of contemporary Hollywood. And I actually think it's a pretty well-argued piece kind of about how a lot of our summer movies these days are more like products, and kind of what the goal of the studios here is to kind of like rope kids in when they're young and then just keep making sequels and just keep roping them and then just keep bringing them back year after year. And I think that's kind of a true thing, but at the same time, that's only 2 or 3 months of the entire year. The other times of the year, you have movies coming out from all kinds of places that are, you know, unique and conversation starting. And, you know, it does reveal something about the person, like we've mentioned, when they choose to write an article about blockbusters that they hate rather than kind of foreign or independent movies that they really love. So I think this recent outburst of kind of film culture is dead articles are, they're kind of overly cynical because there's too many opportunities right now to enliven film culture, and we should, you know, be focusing on those and embracing those.
And I think the idea that only, you know, films that are released in the summer only aim for the four quadrants and are only meant to push products, that's true if you only go to the multiplex. But it's just like people who say that, oh, well, TV is better than film because, you know, movies have Battleship and TV has Mad Men. Well, that's true, but TV also has Honey Boo Boo and films have Uncle Boon Me.
Okay, I just need to interject. What the hell is Honey Boo Boo? Because I keep hearing people bring it up, but I've never seen it and I have no idea what it is.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure either, but...
So we're just going on a name?
I know it's awful.
Okay. Is it on TLC?
It is.
Oh, that makes sense. All right. Just wanted to, because I don't know if other people listening onto the podcast know what it is or if they're going to be just as lost as I am, but I've heard awful things. But no, you make an excellent point. I mean, I watched Treme, and that's a great show, but there's also stuff like Wipeout and Keeping Up with the Kardashians, if that's still on. And I mean, you can't look at it that way. You can't look at the loudest and most obvious thing and say that that's what represents whatever form you're talking about. I mean, over this summer, you know, we had Battleship, but we also had things like Beast of the Southern Wild and Moonrise Kingdom. Like, those were smaller, obviously. They didn't have as much of a marketing push, but they were definitely the type of thing that gets people talking.
Ed Can took place right as the summer, quote-unquote, summer movie season was kicking off, too.
Yeah. So these are, it is one of these things where it's like, if you want to bury your head in the sand and cry that the world is falling apart, you totally can. And it's very easy to, just because the things that we love have stopped interjecting themselves into our lives, and it seems like we have to go out and find them more. I was realizing that I hadn't heard any new music in a long time, and I thought it was just because I hated all the new music that was coming out. And then I realized that like 4 of my favorite bands had put out CDs in the past year, and I just simply had no idea. Because as our lives have migrated more online, if you're not seeking these things out, then it's not going to find you on its own. And so I feel like that's a lot of what this movie culture is dead stuff is dealing with. There was another point that was made in this article. I think it was actually by Bailey. And he was saying that a lot of foreign films, apparently, to him, are not as engrossing or as emotionally engaging as some other stuff that's being put out. He made a distinction between Looper and, I think, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet by... I'm going to mispronounce this name.
Alain Resnais.
Motherfucker. Yeah, thank you. But, I mean, I heard a lot about that. There was, especially last year, Shame came out. And a lot of people said that it was a handsome movie, well acted, but it was emotionally distant and that they didn't feel anything from it. And it seemed like a perfect encapsulation of this idea that the art house has kind of bought into its own bullshit and is starting to lose some of what made it great in the first place. But the weird thing was that I was completely and utterly moved by shame, and I felt it on every level. So I'm starting to wonder also if just the proliferation and easier access of films like this is giving people an access to a level of film that they might not have enjoyed even before. Does that make sense? Have I lost everyone?
I'm just not entirely sure what you mean by that.
What I mean is, there was an idea a couple years ago that if anything came out to the art house, it was going to be something that was going to be important and that they loved, and that there was a kind of universality to the opinions that were coming out about these films because everyone was on board with all of them. But as time has gone on and as distribution styles have changed and made it easier for small films like this to get around, they're able to do more of a mix. The movies don't have to be as homogenistically similar. And so it's possible that these films are just a broader spectrum of independent film, and that these people are always fated to like them less just because they're not as similar anymore.
Well, I think a lot of this issue, too, is subjective because, you know, you only have to watch last week's podcast. And, like, you know, I think Nick wasn't moved by Looper, even though he liked it quite a bit. And so, like, what this critic is saying about the difference between Looper and Renée's film doesn't really work as a universal statement. I also think that you kind of have to take Renée's own, like, personality as a filmmaker into account, because he's been making movies for, like, 5 or 6 decades, and he's going to kind of want to experiment with what he's doing and not do the same thing over and over again. So if you kind of go to his new movie expecting a standard emotional experience, that's probably more on you than it is on the film, which I haven't seen, by the way. And, you know, I think you could probably make a similar argument about, like, Kiarostami, in terms of his movies are generally more intellectual than they are emotional. But I don't think that really makes them less valuable than something like Looper. You know, I don't really even get what that comparison is trying to do, to be honest.
I think, I mean, to me personally, it didn't make a lot of sense either. I think he was talking about an initial emotional, visceral response to something that's going to stay with you, rather than this kind of cold, calculated, academic artsiness.
Yeah, but I mean, and even that, though, is kind of a paradox in itself, because he had an immediate response to a film, and he thinks that that's what lasts. You know what I mean? That's
exactly.
Kind of a bit of a paradox.
Yeah, I mean, a short
which isn't to say that emotional reactions don't last, but it's just a little bit of a...
Is that thought over?
It's just a little bit of a contradiction. Sorry,
okay.
I cut out.
Yeah, I think you did. Yeah, no, I mean, this idea of you know, short-term success equaling greater long-term success is a little bit alien to me. I don't know. It just seems odd to me that people could think that's the case, because especially, I mean, if you just look at podcasts like this one, there are obviously still people talking about it, and there are obviously people still listening to it. So I don't know. I don't know where this person got this idea from. It was interesting to me, though, because I know that it reflected a concern that I had had not too long ago before I really started getting into all this movie stuff that I'm doing now. But yeah, does anyone else have any final thoughts on this? Any last parting barbs they'd like to throw before we get into our review of Argo?
I kind of do.
Okay. Nick, you had quite a lead up to not deliver.
Okay. The people who say that film culture is dead are the same people who complain every year that there are no good movies.
Okay. And Danny, what about yourself?
I just want to say that one thing that the internet has done is kind of keep movies in the conversation. So I was just to name some examples, like last year, both Midnight in Paris and Tree of Life, which came out in the first half of the year, were able to like hang on and get Best Picture, Best Director nominations. And I think a lot of that is because the internet allowed those movies to stay in the conversation all year long. I don't think, you know, you're going to find a lot of things in print about Midnight in Paris in like September or October. I also think that you could look at something like A Separation and say that, you know, maybe in a previous year it would have been nominated but wouldn't have won. But every time you went on the computer at the beginning of this year, someone new was writing like a rave review of that movie. And I think that kind of had an effect. In terms of those movies' public profile, I really do think that this current film culture gave them a boost. So I think that's something.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Because usually early year films like that would have to hope for a re-release or something, which did not happen. But yeah, I have nothing more to add. Excellent discussion, gentlemen. If you have any thoughts on this, of course, you can email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. But that's enough of that. It's time to move into our feature review of Argo, directed and starring Ben Affleck, and just a cavalcade of other great actors, Bryan Cranston, Alan Arkin, John Goodman, Clea DuVall, and Rory Cochran, who is my favorite character actor out there for absolutely no reason.
Actions of Iran have shocked the civilized world.
Our embassy has been seized and more than 60 American citizens continue to be held as hostages.
If we're going to go, then we need to go now.
What happened?
Six of the hostages went out a back exit.
Where are they? The Canadian ambassador's house.
We've got Revolutionary Guards going door to door. These people die. They die badly.
White House?
Who wants the six of them out?
What we like for this are bicycles.
Deliver the six bikes, provide them with maps.
Or you could just send in training wheels and meet them at the border with Gatorade.
It's going to take a miracle to get them out.
All right, so that was part of the trailer to Argo. This is a movie about the real-life extraction mission that the CIA undertook in order to get six... I still haven't figured out what to call these people. I guess six diplomatic workers who are hiding out in Iran after the revolution... everyone knows about the hostage crisis that took place there, but six people escaped. They needed to get out. And so a CIA agent called Tony Mendez devised a scheme to make a fake movie and fly them out under the cover of being a Canadian film crew. This is the third directorial outing for Ben Affleck, so let's see how he did. Danny, why don't you start us off since Nick started off the discussion?
Okay. I really love what Argo represents in the grand scheme of things, which is like adult-oriented entertainment that's smart and serious, but also isn't afraid to kind of have fun while it's keeping up the tension. And I think that the first 45 minutes of the movie are pretty much perfect. One of the signs I got early on that Affleck is really kind of growing as a director was how much time he took to kind of set us up in this world of Tehran in 1979 or 1980. He really spends a lot of time showing us these militants or these anti-revolutionaries climbing up these cages, trying to get into the U.S. embassy. And it's very tense. And he also devotes equal attention to setting up this interior office world that will kind of define the movie. There are a lot of shots of like ashtrays overflowing with cigarettes and just stacks of paper everywhere. And it's a really effective atmospheric kind of approach. And then once we get that intro, there's about 20 minutes that sets up the Affleck storyline. And I think that's also a fantastic setup. I think it has some of the best writing that the movie will have in terms of giving us Alan Arkin, John Goodman, and Bryan Cranston. All their first or second scenes are just pitched at a really good rate. And then I do think the rest of the movie kind of fails to sustain that. I think it's probably because as well written as the screenplay is, it doesn't really give us a character to hang on to. I like Affleck's look in the movie. You know, he's got like his shaggy beard. It's kind of a cool performance for a star like him to do, but there's still really not much of a character there. And I'd say the same thing for most of the hostages that he's spending time with. I kind of had some problems in particular with the way kind of backstory was shoved onto Scoot McNairy's character, even though he's really good. Some of those tricks didn't really work for me. But overall, I really like the movie, even if I'm not quite in the, like, let's make it win Best Picture kind of category.
All right. And Nick, what about yourself?
I feel like I don't have to say anything because Danny just said it all.
all right.
Yeah, you know, Argo is an interesting little prospect because... You know, I liked it. I'll just say that up front. I liked it. It was good and stuff, as many Pulitzer for critics winners. What am I even saying? Jesus Christ. I liked it. This movie kind of, I saw it and then that was kind of it. Really? That was it. I just, like water off a duck, you could say. It was sort of hindered, I think, by the fact that there's no interesting characters throughout. I don't think there's one single interesting character in this entire film. And I'm counting someone who's good in this movie, like Alan Arkin. But he's good because of the performance, not the writing. How many times can he say "Argo, fuck yourself" before it becomes a tired joke, for instance?
I don't know, I laughed each time.
Oh, well, yeah, but I mean, and how many times can John Goodman as John Chambers, the legendary makeup artist, how many times can he end a scene on a one-liner before it just kind of becomes tired? It's things like that which really weighed down for me, is sort of the sense of repetition. There's sort of the structure of this movie kind of doubles back on itself, I think, which is sort of an interesting idea, but I don't believe that it helped it in the dramatic department. I think it sort of finds itself hindered there. And it's not just because you know what's going to happen, but because it sort of feels like the stakes are small. It's only six people, which, yes, they should be freed because that's the right thing to do. But at the same time, that's just sort of it. You have to free these six people. They free them. The film ends. And you get Jimmy Carter's voice over the end credits. And then what? I don't know. So I almost feel as though I like this movie almost if I was to stand at it from a distance. But up close, I think it has quite a few issues.
Okay.
That was completely incomprehensible, by the way. So just edit all that out.
I'll edit around your incomprehensibility. I should point out to people listening at home, we're recording about an hour earlier than we usually do. So apologies if we're a little bit off. Yeah, I guess this is weird. I loved this movie. I didn't have any of the problems with it that any of you seem to have. And I thought Nick, you, before we began recording, you said this was going to be a very brief review. I figured it was because we all loved this unreservedly, as I did. Obviously, I was incorrect in that assumption. Yes, there is some repetition. The statement of "Argo, fuck yourself," I liked it because it became kind of an in-joke to these gentlemen who were like the only three people who really knew what was going on. And it just kind of was this great all-encompassing, like, we're going to pull off this crazy mission. No one knows what the hell we're doing. It's hilarious. It's great. If I had any issues with characters, it really only came down to one guy who I think was the character that Danny was talking about, Scoot McNairy's character, Joe Stafford, the one who kept having all these issues. He was just really, really down on this plan, and they didn't maybe do as good of a job as they should have setting up why he was. I know he had a character beat where he talked about being ashamed that he put his wife in this position of possibly dying. But they could have done a little more with that. But I think that in a movie like this, it's not so much character as it is action. And I think that they did a tremendous job of keeping the tension up in this film. Because I know this story. I know how it ends. I've read articles on this event that happened before this was even supposed to become a movie. And I know how it ends. Like, and I, coming into it, I was really concerned because there's been other films this year that have really let me down. Not tremendously so, not movie-breakingly so, but if anyone remembers the Lawless podcast, I said that knowing what was going to happen kind of sapped a little bit of the energy from it for me. And I didn't have that trouble with this film. For some reason, even going up to the very end, I was still sort of at the edge of my seat, waiting to see what happened, waiting to see how they'd get over each and every little thing that came up to become an obstacle for them. And I thought it was beautiful. It's a really good-looking film. Affleck's direction is, like, subtle to the point that it almost borders on feeling workmanlike, if you know what I mean. Like, he's a director that doesn't get in his own way with style. And a lot of people would probably underestimate that and say that it's a really easy thing to do, but I don't believe it is. Like, if you watch a really workmanlike film, then you'll know the difference. And I think the fact that the tension kept rising for me speaks a lot to his abilities as a director. And yeah, I don't know. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was engaging. I really enjoyed the amount of attention they gave to the details surrounding the event that happened. They didn't really water down the politics or the history. And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you guys. I'm I'm at about a 10. You all are probably at about a 7.
You'd give this movie a 10?
I mean, like...
What?
For what it's trying to do, yeah. Like, if the scale I'm using is recommendation, not, like, actual A+, this movie gets 5 stars. But, like, if someone were to say to me, recommend Argo to me on a scale of 1 to 10, I would recommend it wholeheartedly. I don't think there's a single person I wouldn't tell to go see this film because I think it's great.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
Okay, I've never heard of a grading scale for recommending a film. That's why I reacted.
I figured that's why I felt the need to immediately... No, on a term of, like, rating a movie, which I hate to do, and I rarely ever do, I would say this is probably, like, a B+.
Okay.
Just because of that. I mean, like, it does lack some characterization. There isn't really a character to hang on to, but it's not about the character so much as it is about, like I said, the event, the action that takes place. And I think in that way, it does a really great job of not only setting up the stakes, but making you understand them, making you understand every single thing that can go wrong, and then making those things happen or, you know, not happen in a way that continuously keeps you on your toes.
Yeah. Word about Affleck's direction. I do think he really shows his strength in the opening scene of this film, which is a riot outside the Canadian embassy. Or is it the U.S.
embassy?
It was
the American embassy. That was the U.S. embassy.
I thought it was the U.S.
Okay. So did I.
Buff.
But
I'll edit that out.
Anyway, I think that the staging and execution of that is quite impressive, particularly when it actually when the shit actually hits the fan and people are storming the embassy. It's very exciting and very visceral too. Great use of tear gas. Love a great use of tear gas in a movie. And also,
Nick Newman doesn't like the color green. Is a fan of tear gas.
Yes. Yeah. Holidays are not fun at my house. Anyway, I do think that. I wish the movie had a bit more of that, honestly, because following that, a lot of it is these well composed, but again, workmanlike scenes set in offices and all that, which I just don't gravitate toward as much, frankly. That's just, unless the dialogue is exemplary, which I don't know if it necessarily is in this case. It's good, moves along, but, I wish, maybe, I don't know, perhaps I wish for a revisionist history where the Iran hostage crisis was worse, so we could get a more exciting movie, but, you know.
If only they'd killed some people.
Well, yeah, I'm sure some people were killed.
I don't know. that opening scene that we were talking about, I was wondering about that, because the scene lasts a lot longer than you'd think it would in a movie like this. You'd imagine that... I don't want to say like a Die Hard type opening, but I mean, this movie does hinge on these people escaping a bad situation and immediately going into hiding. And so you'd think that would be like the first thing that happens is just them like racing through the streets. But there's actually a long time setting up the confusion and the terror that's happening in this office and the way that things kind of go wrong. And the various different ways that these diplomats are trying to figure out the best course of action. They know they have to shred and burn all these documents, but they also know that they have to get the hell out because this is not going to end well. And I think that it was just one of those scenes where there's terrible things happening outside, and then you see like 6 people standing in a circle arguing about what to do, and part of you, the reptilian side of your brain, is like, get the hell out of there, just fucking run, people. And I thought that was a brilliant scene. I thought it was great. Yeah, after that, like I said, it kind of slows down. But, I mean, considering that a lot of this is conversations discussing various options for what to do, I mean, you can't cut that like a Tony Scott film. Though Tony Scott would have cut it like a Tony Scott film, and I'm sure it would have been interesting. If he could make standing in the middle of a train engine.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I guess I just didn't have the problems you had with it. I was too engrossed in it otherwise. I guess
right, but I think that what I said earlier is that you can be engrossed in it while you're watching it, but coming out, I kind of the movie had just ended and I moved on with my life. There was nothing else for me to ponder.
But see, I mean, I don't have to ponder it. I mean, it's not the type of movie that ends on like a subtle reflective twist that might.
Okay, maybe not ponder, but there was nothing to consider for me. Okay. I just kind of.
Because every time I've thought about it, I've just gone back to those moments that have kind of grabbed me. And I mean, there's a great scene where they're sitting around a table, I think at the Secretary of State's office, and they're going through all the options. And there's a clip of it in the trailer where it's like, you know, we like bikes for this. You know, we ship bikes and, you know, send them out. And, you know, he rightly points out that it's like 300 miles. It's the middle of winter there. And then they talk about being like crop researchers. And then he points out that there's snow on the ground. And then he talks about teachers. And then he brings up why the hell would there still be English speaking teachers there? And it's just one of these scenes where it kind of he is showing his aptitude by pointing out everyone else's ineptitude. And
right,
I enjoy scenes
we've
like
seen
that.
100 times before.
Yeah, but I think it was well done.
What's that?
You know, I think it was a really well done scene.
It's a good scene, but it's not revelatory.
It's not revelatory, but it is the type of thing where I go back and just the interplay, not only between, you know, just the idea of the scene, but the actors in it were great.
Yeah, all right. I'm being too rough here.
I mean, you could be rough. Zeljko Ivanic was in that. I mean, I think last week I said how much I enjoyed that guy. And,
he was also in The Words, by the way.
He was in The Words?
Yeah, and I like that movie. I'm going to just mention that.
I never saw The Words.
So Argo gets a 10 and The Words gets a recommendation.
back to the scene.
I feel like our rating systems are just all screwed up right now. A 10 really means 5 apples. But yeah. No, like I said, that scene was good. I enjoy that there was no one here who was really overacting. I feel like given the fact that, you know, it is such a, this is a situation that calls for a lot of bad things happening. And that's a really good opportunity for people to like overreact. And even in the scenes where the six, again, they're not really hostages. I don't know what to call them. The six house guests is what they're referred to in the movie. Even in the scenes where they're kind of having their issues and screaming at one another for various reasons, it's not a histrionic, like everyone's trying to outact one another. It really does feel like just six people under a lot of stress fucking yelling at each other. And like, maybe that's not a fantastic revelation in terms of cinema, but considering what it could have been, I thought that it was a really, really just interesting choice to make. Does that make sense? Like, I'm just happy, sure. Like kind of like Danny was. Like, it's a good adult, mature entertainment that offers fun and thrills and even a little bit of a history lesson if you never knew that all this shit went down in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad I saw it, and it gave me some nice history. I didn't know that side of the Iran hostage crisis, and I thought I knew everything about it. not really. But,
believe you me, gentlemen, if anyone knew anything about the Iran hostage crisis...
What's that?
Nothing. No. It's another thing to get it.
All I know is from my dad, who always goes, "It was a disaster until Reagan came in." But that's a different story.
It did go on for 444 days.
Yeah, because Carter was kind of a limp dick. But getting that extra light on it was fun, as well as just kind of seeing how they pulled it off. But it's part of my problem. I almost would have liked more of that. I would have liked more of the Hollywood side, frankly, because I thought that was more fun than being holed up in the... Who would have thought Hollywood is more fun than being holed up in a house in Iran? But, you know,
I understand that. I get that idea. The thing is, and this is the funny thing, is that it takes place over the course of like 5 days.
Yeah.
Like, that's an incredible amount of work to get done in that short of a time.
Yeah.
One of the things I found interesting was, and this goes back to something Nick said earlier, that was like the scope of the film is kind of deceptive because it sets up this global crisis and then the story really just does revolve around the lives of six people. So I would have liked more of the scenes where like Affleck is interrogating them about their fake profiles, because that's really where like the personal conflict of the movie is, which is just in that terror of the confrontation that's going to happen between them and these guards at the airport. And there's like one scene, I think there's only one scene where Affleck really like grills them about their profile's history, and it goes by really quickly. And I thought that was some of like the most organic conflict in the movie, rather than like these choreographed arcs of like the Scoot McNairy character. And I would have liked more maybe of them like acknowledging how like personal and specific of a story this is, as opposed to just like the global conflict. Because if you even look at the true story, this wasn't like a miracle type story where the nation like rallied around it, because nobody knew about it, because they had to stay confidential. So it would have been kind of cool for them to really drill down the personal aspects, I think.
I was going back to that scene that you're talking about when he was grilling them. There's a moment where he asks who the last three prime ministers of Canada are.
Mm-hmm.
And the person gets, I think, like two of them. Or maybe, I think maybe she gets all three. Like, she gets it. She nails it. And he's like, okay, good. I was thinking about Jay Leno has a thing on his show that he does sometimes called jaywalking. And when he does that, he goes out and asks people on the street very, very basic questions, like, who is the current vice president? And people get that shit wrong. And I'm just like, if you had the opposite where you had to pretend to be American, it almost seems like the best course of action would be to get one of them wrong. Because if you knew all of them, someone would think something was wrong. And that really depressed me for a minute when I was in the theater. It's completely unrelated to anything. But I was just like, you know, it's great that I don't know who the last three prime ministers of Canada are, but apparently there are people who don't even know who the current vice president is. I was just like, shit, that's awful. I do get what you mean in that scene, though. I mean, I kind of feel like we need to go into spoilers for this, just to, for me
what
to
is
get
there
in
to,
my...
What is there to spoil?
I don't know. Spoiler alert, everyone. We're in spoilers now. So everyone gets out alive. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I knew everything going in, so it's a difficult movie to spoiler. But, yeah, so they all get out alive. My problem is if they had spent too much time really drilling in, like, the training sequences, but then it never came time to pass that they had to actually be interrogated.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
You'd get the feeling that, like, well, that was a fucking waste of time. I don't know. That's just me. Because I wanted more of that, too. There was a point when I was like, man, I really want to see him, like, putting these people under the wire and, like, making them, like, talk about their third grade class pet. And then I was like, but then they're going to get to the airport. They're not going to get interrogated. And
because,
then,
like, the guy can't even speak English. He's just kind of, like yelling at them, and you don't know what he's saying. And it's like, oh, should we just stand here? Like, let's show him some storyboards.
Yeah, I did really like that moment, though. Scoot McNairy. I just love saying that guy's name. I think that's why we keep going back to him and not calling him by his character name. You know, he's been this kind of Debbie Downer about this whole situation. But then when push comes to shove, he really steps up and sells the pitch. Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. I like this movie, guys. I don't know what to say. I think that anyone out there who's interested in it should go see it. And even if you think you won't like it, you should probably check it out anyway, because it's pretty damn good. Yeah. We went into spoilers. We're going to be here for like 12 seconds, because there's really not anything to talk about.
Well, might as well get it over with. Oh, I want to say it was kind of funny. I saw this movie mostly with a crowd of older people, which I think is to be expected for this, especially on a Saturday afternoon.
Right.
And when it ended and Ben Affleck's name came up, an old woman in the crowd went, "Oh my God, it was directed by Ben Affleck." Like, she just had no idea. And I was thinking, what?
It's not possible.
It's just kind of weird. I don't know.
Well, it's weird. I mean, I had a similar just reaction. I was like, I'm really looking forward to Argo. And in the back of my head, I know that it's directed by Ben Affleck. And then I'm like, holy shit, like, it's directed by Ben Affleck. And I was like, thinking about 10 years ago, like, any movie with Ben Affleck in it
was bad.
Yeah. Like, I told friends I was going to go see Argo. And they're like, the Ben Affleck movie? I was like, are you saying that in terms of him being an actor or a director? And then they said, he's directing? And when I pointed out that he directed Gone Baby Gone and The Town, they were just like fucking blown away. Like, they loved those movies. They're like, oh shit, I had no idea. I was like, you're aware he acted in The Town too, right? They're like, oh yeah, no, he's good now. I was like, oh Jesus.
I think it's time to find better friends. Brian.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's not talk about that. I have friends. But yeah, no. I don't even know. I don't even know where we were going before that. You were talking about old ladies not knowing it was directed by Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I just had a moment where I was thinking about the fact that I was going to go see his new movie. And I was realizing that he really is like a director whose work I look forward to. And I was thinking about how ridiculous that would have been 10 years ago for me to think.
Yeah, even 5 years ago when Gone Baby Gone came out and everybody was going, oh, he can do things.
Yeah, and I think it was a really smart move for him not to appear in his first film.
Yeah, he had I think he said before that Casey is the one who should be acting. And judging by I'm Still Here, Ben is the one who should be directing. But
oh, now I get it.
Judging each other by their failures. Yeah, I can get behind that. Though, again, I think that his work in this and in The Town has been pretty good. Search me. I don't know what the hell else he's been in as an actor in the last 5 years. I'm going to look it up right now just to check.
State of Play.
He was in State of Play.
It wasn't bad.
The Company Men, which I didn't see. Extract. Was actually funny in Extract.
Oh, he was funny in Extract. That's right, yeah.
Oh, man.
He's good in that.
He was in Smoke and Aces, but that was technically 6 years ago.
Technically horrible?
I don't know. I can't remember Smoke and Aces that well. I'm assuming you did not like it.
Oh, it's awful.
All right. Yeah, I don't remember anything about that movie. I think I saw it when I was drunk. Gonna edit that out.
All right, maybe we should,
Let's wrap this up. So I say definitely go see it. I'm assuming that you two, despite your reservations, are also saying it's worth a look.
Yeah.
Worth a look, absolutely.
Maybe a matinee.
Okay.
But, yeah.
I would go early evening.
I went at 7:30, and I was able to get a good seat. There was a good crowd. So I don't know. I don't know why we're talking about fucking times on You Should See a Movie. Anyway, we obviously have nothing else to say. Good film. Check it out. Slight reservations. Let's move on to the week ahead. Blu-ray and DVD releases. For October 16th, we have Avatar 3D getting released. We also have Moonrise Kingdom. Pete's Dragon, A League of Their Own. Something called Terror Train. Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. The Chernobyl Diaries, El Enchanted. And a small horror film that actually debuted, I think, at AFI Silver this past weekend called Excision, which is supposed to be interesting. But, yeah, anyone looking at all this stuff, see anything they really want to call out as being something worth seeing?
Moonrise Kingdom, my current favorite film of the year on Blu-ray, so that's worth picking up.
Current favorite of the year.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And we did review that on this show. I hadn't seen it at the time. I do remember that both of you said it was a pretty damn good movie.
Yeah, it was when I saw it a second time that became my favorite film of the year.
Gotcha.
Any reservations?
Yeah, I'm definitely going to set aside time to see it again because I remember you mentioned that the second viewing was big.
Yeah, any reservations I had just melted away completely.
Well, I had no reservations.
So there's that and Mad Men season 5. Of course. Great season. Otherwise,
definitely
not much. Criterion's putting out The Forgiveness of Blood, which is actually a Netflix watch instantly, and I've heard is very good, so I will give that a gander.
Yeah, you should. I reviewed it for the site when it came out, and I interviewed the director as well. And
oh, very cool.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable film. It's by the guy who did Maria Full of Grace.
Yeah,
and it's interesting, and it's just anyone who doesn't know what it's about. I'm assuming it's most of you. It's in Albania they have these things called blood feuds, where if a male in one family kills a male of another family, then technically the wronged family is allowed to kill the other guy. And if he happens to go to prison, then they can kill another male in the family. And so this is about a teenage boy who has this blood feud put against him. And so he basically becomes cloistered in his own house. And it's a really interesting portrait of a modern kid caught up in this archaic system and the way that he has to deal with it. And yeah, it was pretty good. I enjoyed it. I think I gave it like a B+.
Cool.
But yeah, I definitely check it out. I actually might buy it because it's on Criterion, and I'd love to see a little more of the stuff in there. And I wanted to point that out. I loved Moonrise Kingdom unreservedly the first time. Still haven't seen it the second time. If you get it, you get the Blu-ray, the DVD, the digital copy, and the ultraviolet copy.
Oh, so there's one out of four that you'll use.
I was about to say. So I was going to say 3 out of 4. I don't know anyone who's used ultraviolet, but every once in a while I get a digital copy around.
Right, but if you have a Blu-ray player, why are you going to use the DVD?
If you're watching it on a laptop that doesn't have a Blu-ray player?
Maybe. I don't know. I tend to just give the DVD to somebody.
You go to your lame aunt's house and she doesn't have a Blu-ray player?
Yeah. Well, it's not like I'm carrying the movie around.
Oh, anytime I go anywhere, like on vacation, I bring like a selection of 6 movies that I'll probably want to watch when I'm not dealing with people.
Oh, I do too, but those are usually films that I haven't seen before.
Gotcha.
Like, I have my two. This is so stupid. I have my 2 Netflix movies and then some other stuff.
All right.
Moving
Danny,
on.
Yeah, Danny, did you have a specific one you wanted to call out, or are you just going to go with Moonrise Kingdom? Or are you not here anymore?
Danny?
Danny.
Oh, Danny. Sorry. I'm actually going to single out Everybody's Fine, not sarcastically. You know, if you want to get your Robert De Niro on before Silver Linings Playbook, I actually think he's quite good in that movie. So is Sam Rockwell. So
that's right. Coming out.
Yeah,
I don't see it here, but I'll take your word for it.
I mean, it's on here. So if the site's right, then I'm right.
Oh wait, no, there it is. I found it. Yeah, Everybody's Fine. I guess you could do that.
Came out 2 years ago. I wonder why it's getting.
Yeah, that's confused me too. But I think De Niro, he usually likes his movies to come out a few years later on Blu-ray.
It was actually, I stand corrected, it was 3 years ago.
Okay.
Damn.
Yeah, and then not many people really saw it. I think I saw it like at a hotel randomly, and I enjoyed it.
And did Jordan like That's My Boy? Am I remembering that correctly?
He did.
Yeah, he liked that, I think.
All right, so if you want to give that a shot, it's coming out too. But moving on to theaters, this is going to be even quicker. We got Alex Cross, which
yes.
is directed by Rob Cohen, starring Tyler Perry and Matthew Fox. Yeah. We got Paranormal Activity 4, which is happening. Jesus. And then The Sessions, which is actually supposed to be pretty good. John Hawks, Helen Hunt, William H. Macy, and someone with the awesome name of Moon Bloodgood. I will see it for that reason alone.
Mm.
That's the one about John Hawks playing the guy in the iron lung who goes to a sex therapist.
Mm-hmm.
Like a therapist who helps you by having sex with you, I guess.
Yeah, we were quoted in the trailer, actually.
All right. So definitely see it. Yeah, I don't know. I guess those are all happening. I'm going to say if you have to see anything, see The Sessions, I guess. But,
Go see Seven Psychopaths.
Yeah, that came out this week. I saw it last week. It's really good. Very enjoyable. Tom Waits is in it. He's holding a bunny.
Tom Waits, don't you mean?
Or as he would pronounce it.
That's also Nick Nolte, too.
No, Nick Nolte's worse.
His is slightly higher pitched.
Exactly. Holy shit. Man. Anyway, yeah, so I guess, does anyone want to stand up for Paranormal Activity 4 or Alex Cross?
I want to see Alex Cross.
I do too.
I'm not going to pay money to see it. I'll rent it when it comes out on DVD in 3 months.
It looks so funny.
It looks so bad. And I just, it's a Tyler Perry starring action film directed by Rob Cohen, where
you
Matthew
say that,
Fox
and I think
plays
that
a muscular MMA fighter. It looks so terrible, but I'm so compelled by it, too.
I was about to say, you say Tyler Perry starring Rob Cohen directed, and I think that you just had a stroke. Like, nothing that you just said makes any sense to me, but it's true.
Whoever made that trailer did a good job, because
you don't cross
Alex Cross. That's like the best shitty pun they could come up with.
Mm.
Like that's like it just feels like they could do something else with it, and I don't know what because it's still early. It's noon and it's early, and I just don't know. I just feel like there was something better.
I feel like maybe they just kind of thought to themselves that this will probably make a profit, but it's never going to make a lot of money, so we don't really need to put that much work into it.
Yeah.
So you don't cross Alex Cross. We got it.
It just, I don't know. I don't know. Why did the chicken cross the road to not cross Alex Cross?
Yeah.
Jesus.
That is the nadir of this podcast.
That is the worst that we will ever be, and
that
I immediately apologize. Paranormal Activity 4. I saw the first one. I think a lot of people did, and it was okay. for what it was. But, I mean, like, I don't know. This is by the same people who did Catfish, isn't it?
They're actually, they're friends with Raphias Dorian, who writes for the site.
Really?
So
should we not?
I don't know if that's a conflict of interest, but...
I enjoyed Catfish, I'll say that. I don't know about... They did the last Paranormal Activity, which I actually heard was better than the second one. I don't know. I feel like when you get up to four, it's just like my mind is boggled and it's awful. It's like starting to count French fries. It's like this fifth French fry was better than the first French fry, but the second one was still the best. Like, they're all the same. Jesus. Okay. And then The Sessions looks pretty good. We're quoted on the poster and it's gotten a lot of good notices, and John Hawks is awesome.
Even better, the trailer.
The trailer is... Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not the poster, the trailer.
Not the poster. Fuck the poster. Anyone can get on a poster. Trailer's where it's at. John Hawks and William H. Macy are awesome, and I love the name Moon Bloodgood. I'm clicking on it. I need to see who this person is. Oh, all right. She was in Pathfinder, Falling Skies, 8 Below. I don't know. I don't know about her choice in movies, but that name is awesome. So, I don't know. Check it out. I don't know. I'm still going to go with 7 Psychopaths, though, because I've actually seen that. All right, gentlemen, let's do our random recommendations and then wrap up. Danny, why don't you start us off? What's something you've seen this week that you think people should check out?
I saw The Host at midnight last night, which is the Korean monster movie from a few years ago. Have you guys seen it?
No, I haven't. I've only seen Mother from him. I really liked, so catch up.
Yeah, Mother's really good. This is this movie's not as psychologically complex, because that movie is pretty creepy, and it's like a kind of a character study. This is like kind of a full-blown monster movie, but the scale of that kind of allows him almost to do things that he couldn't really do in Mother, just because it would have made it a mess tonally. But this is a really fun movie, and there are sequences cinematically that are just pretty spectacular, especially on the big screen. And there's also some very funny satire. Every American doctor that shows up in the movie, one of them is like cross-eyed and just a complete dimwit. The other one kind of sets the whole story in motion by making one of his employees pour poison down a drain into the Han River. And it's a really fun movie that you should seek out. Just really good.
Where'd you see that?
IFC.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It was an unfortunately small crowd, only about like 7 or 8 people, but it was still pretty fun.
Cool.
All right. Yeah. And Nick, what about yourself?
It is with great shame that I have to actually reach back to last week to recommend something.
Oh,
because,
snap.
The only new movie I've actually seen this week is Argo, because Friday night I rewatched Casino Royale, and last night I rewatched Quantum of Solace, because I'm seeing a certain movie tonight. I think I'm allowed to say I'm seeing Skyfall tonight.
I was about to say, Twitter's been alight with people saying that. I still hate you, though.
Yeah, I had to bone up on the past two installments. So I'm going to go back to last week, which I hate to do, but I'll recommend Greetings, which is a 1968 film directed by Brian De Palma that stars Robert De Niro. It is... sort of, it has no real characteristics that would define a De Palma movie. There aren't the Hitchcock references. There aren't, nobody's getting stabbed or eviscerated with some kind of blade. Nobody's getting killed in an elevator or on a stairway. There is nudity, which I guess marks it. But actually, wait, I am completely wrong. There is a connection to De Palma, because one of the characters talks about blow up and the Kennedy assassination, and they talk about the process of blowing up photographs, which very much ties into Blowout, right? Dun,
dun, dun. Clear connection there.
Little auteur's connection. It's actually very interesting. Anyhow. It's a good film. It's actually, it's almost sort of like if, imagine if Godard, in his more satirical period, made a movie in the United States.
Okay.
It would kind of be like that. And yeah, it's fun. It's only like 80 minutes, so it's brief, but I like sort of getting these political dispatches from a certain period, which I think this film very much is, which gives it a certain undeniable value, I think. But it's also funny. So it's a little hard to find, but if you can get your hands on it, check it out.
All right. I'm in a weird position this week, because I've seen two films that are new, but they're the digital downloads from Xbox like 3 weeks before the DVD of Magic Mike and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter. And I feel like everyone already knows my feelings on that. Both are good. You should check out both. We did a whole podcast on Magic Mike. But I mean, like, the only other movie I've seen is a shitty Netflix instant streaming thing called The Dead Undead. Because I think I've mentioned this before. Me and my friends like to do Shitty Movie Saturday, where we, like, drink and make food and watch really awful films. This one was really terrible, guys. I can only recommend it if you're the type of person who likes to actively, like, mock and make fun of a movie while you're watching it. Because this movie deals with vampires who are fighting zombie vampires. I'll let that sink in for a second. Yeah, it's a shitty, awful film. But again, if you have a group of friends and you like to, you know, burn a film while you're watching it, like, this is a good one for it. We got some solid zingers in there. Other than that, yeah, I mean, check out Magic Mike and Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, because I enjoyed both of those. Obviously, depending on what you're in for, you should choose one of those over the other. That's it for me. I didn't watch anything else this week. It's been kind of busy. So yeah, let's wrap up. Let's tell everyone where they can find us on the internet. And next week, are we talking about Seven Psychopaths next week?
Are we talking
about that or Forgiveness of Blood?
Ooh.
I think either is a great option.
All right.
Yeah.
So you can come back next week where we'll talk about one of those two movies. And until then, we see where we can be found on the internet. Nick, start us off.
TheFilmStage.com and Twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
And Danny.
TheFilmStage.com, TheKingBulletin.com, and Twitter.com/TheKingBulletin.
And you can find me at TheFilmStage.com, DearFilm.net, and Twitter.com/BrianJRowan. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you once again for joining us, and we look forward to speaking to you next week. This is, in which he... sorry, I nearly just choked on myself. And I think, You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet by, I'm going to mispronounce this name.
Alain Rene.
Motherfucker. Yeah, thank you. And,
I think he deserves a better classification than motherfucker, but, yeah.
I said I was going to mispronounce it like a motherfucker. I don't know what I said. It's all getting edited out anyway. I don't let my mistakes live. But that's enough of that. It's time to move into our feature review of Argo, written and directed by Ben Affleck. Nope, not written by Ben Affleck. Directed and starring Ben Affleck. This is a movie about the real-life extraction All right, at least we're going to have some fucking bloopers for the end of this podcast. Slight reservations. Let's move on to the week ahead. Why did I just open Spotify? It's too early. It's too early, guys. I can't keep this up. Madagascar 3, Europe's Most Wanted. There's a bunch of other stuff that's getting re-released that I can't see now because Spotify just jumped in front of everything I'm doing. Holy shit.